G'day, this is Dallas from Sydney, Australia, and we're live at Wrigley Field, and you're listening to the Cubs podcast. I'm going to pass it over. Enjoy.
Okay, so here's Rafael from Brazil. We're here at the game. We are winning. How much is it? It is 3-0. I'm just going to pass to the third nation here, Canada.
Hey, this is Kevin. I'm from Toronto, Canada, and you are listening to the IVNV podcast.
Hi, and thanks for downloading this, the 424th episode of the IVNV podcast. The Cubs continue to roll along. They beat the Brewers 4 times in 3 days this week. We will talk about those games. We're going to look at Hamill and Hendricks and their impressive pitching. We'll cover a lot more on this episode. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hello, it's Andy.
And Kurt.
Oh, man. Okay, guys. So I have to tell you that I found the Houston version of Duffy's this week. So I was in Houston. I'd said that I was going to go to the Astros-Cardinals game on Wednesday, yesterday, but apparently I didn't think ahead to look to see that the game, what time the game started. It was an afternoon game, so I didn't get to do it. So my brother-in-law was like, oh, I've heard there's this Cubs bar, you know, in Houston, so let's go check it out. We went there. So it's called TK Bitterman's, and it was incredible. It really was like Duffy's in so many ways, yet uniquely different. So it's a house. Like, it's literally a house. And I think someone must live in it. Like, I think someone maybe lives upstairs. I think.
TK? Yeah. Is that TK himself?
He lives upstairs.
Mr. Bitterman. But they have, like, it was weird. You know, they kind of had, like, the, like, kind of cliche Cubs memorabilia stuff. But then they had, like, really, like, odd things I'd never seen before. They had one, I guess it's a painting. I don't know. It's like the family, it's like the Chicago Cubs family tree. It was really interesting. And they had like a napkin, sign, like autographed by Harry Carey, like just sitting
a next napkin.
Just a lot.
Is it framed or anything?
Oh, I just lost my camera.
Uh-oh. Oh boy. Yeah. That's something. I'm actually looking at pictures of TK Bitterman's on the Google right now. So
you guys remember Lisa at Duffy's, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, TK Bitterman's absolutely has a Lisa. Like, and
oh, of course they do.
Yeah, she was in rare form. I don't know what her name was. The highlight for me, both the highlight and really kind of the like low light, I guess, is was the same moment, which was when, okay, so I'm sitting there and we had, you know, of course, like a nice dive bar. You can have food delivered there. So we were eating some Thai food, watching the Cubs game. Nobody else in there, like they were all fascinated with the Olympics. And I think I told you there was one like supremely overweight man in there, just pounding his chest with every medal that the United States won. And I believe his quote, the thing that he kept saying is, "That's what we do." And he kept saying,
"That's what we do,"
or "That's how we do," or something like that.
Claiming ownership.
Yes. I was like, sir, I don't think you've ever done. So anyway, this Lisa, which is not her name, but she, okay. So we're watching the Cubs game and all of a sudden I felt something brush against my leg. And this is the type of place where like, I don't know, something brushes against your leg. You're looking down because something's not right. And there was a dog. Like just out of the blue, and it was like dragging a leash. I have no idea where it came from, and then this Lisa jumped down off of her chair and then like leaned, like squatted to pet the dog, and just tipped over backwards, and then just laid there with her feet in the air. And then she said I fell because I was petting the dog, and then she said, "My man recently died and the light in my eyes are gone. I was like, oh,
what?
Yeah, I was like, ouch.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Boy, she's going to drink away her sorrows at the Bittermans.
Yeah, she was.
At least,
too.
At least there's a service dog.
But I don't know. So if you're in the Houston area, you probably know about TK Bitterman's, or if you're traveling there, you know, you're going to stop there. They do have the MLB package, so they did turn the game on for us. Their internet wasn't great, so it was interrupted frequently, but it was an experience. And, I'm just kind of like curious, like some of these places we were talking about last night, I was talking about with Jay, and I said that, you know, you don't go somewhere, at least maybe it's just that I don't notice it, but you don't go to like cities and they have like a Red Sox bar or a Yankees bar. I mean, it's just weird that almost every town you go into has like a Chicago bar, that's typically kind of dominated by the Cubs usually. But anyway,
well, the Cubs are ubiquitous. They're everywhere.
Yeah, I guess so. But so, yeah, before I went down to Houston, I was able to catch a game with some of our international listeners, Dallas from Australia. By the way, it's not Raphael, it's Rafael. So right. I kind of felt bad that we're pronouncing his name wrong. Rafael from Brazil. And then, of course, Kevin and George from Canada. By the way, Rafael, he gave us some shot glasses here, Brazilian shot glasses. So I got one for each of one of you guys.
Nice, sweet.
And then I thought that, so Dallas has been like, so he's been traveling for like 2 or 3 months and he was in Europe for a long time, and so he brought me a gift. I wanted to show it to you guys, from Paris, and he just thought it was hilarious. So it is a baseball that has the Eiffel Tower on it. He said it just looked so you know, just kind of bizarre that he couldn't pass it up. So
Are there signatures on it?
Yeah, it's look, it's autographed by Paris, France.
I thought for a second you were about to say Hilton. So
nope.
I'm glad it's France.
Oh man.
That's bizarre. That is really strange.
I know. So that is going up here in the studio on display. So thank you to Rafael and Dallas for sharing those with me. So anyway, yeah, I wanted to talk about that game though. And I guess this is kind of where we can start our conversation with this series. So this was my first time seeing Chapman pitch in person. And, well, first off, okay, so I have a couple thoughts about this. So this was in the first game of the doubleheader on Tuesday. So it was the game they won 4-0. That one was 4-0, I think. I think the second one was 4-1. I don't remember exactly, but yeah, I think that's what it was. So anyway, so
4-0. Yeah, you're right.
Right. So Joe Smith came in to pitch the ninth. And then after two walks, Madden made the call to bring in Chapman. And I mean, it's like after that second walk, like the crowd was like chanting for Chapman. And then you saw like Joe's head pop out of the dugout and the crowd like was going wild. It was so weird. And so like, and so then I was kind of excited because I wanted to see him pitch. And then like, so they went to him and Chapman was walking in or, you know, running in, and they were playing the music and like everybody around us was clapping. And then I like kind of started clapping. And then like, I was like, this is, I don't know. I don't really feel right clapping. And then it was funny because Dallas was like, You have mixed emotions, don't you? Or something like that. And I was like, yeah, that is it. Because I was excited to see him pitch, but then I was like, I don't really want to cheer for this guy, you know? So, I don't know.
Doesn't he walk into Rage Against the Machine? Maybe that's what got you pumped up.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it was. But, yeah, I don't know. I just kind of felt like it was odd. And maybe people that go to more games have kind of like come to terms with the idea of cheering for this guy, but with that being my first time seeing him pitch in person, it was odd and just kind of a weird thing to kind of grapple with, I guess. But then in the night game of the doubleheader, Joe went to Travis Wood, who gave up a home run and a single, and then Madden went out and called in Chapman again. And I was just kind of thinking about these situations, and I think that both of those games could have been a lot more dicey, but having Chapman there means that you know, when it's clear that a reliever is not sharp in the ninth inning, save situation or not, or the eighth inning even, he has Chapman to bring in and lock it down. So even though I think by bringing in Joe Smith, I don't know, I'm not sure about the matchups. I don't really remember. I was just, you know, I was thinking like, oh, they're just wanting to save Chapman and bring in Joe Smith and see if he can close out the ninth. And it's like, it's just really interesting that like we've seen teams kind of come back on the Cubs like that, even a couple times this year, but especially in the past. And it's like, this is like the hammer, you know, you bring it in, it's like, okay, now it's done. And I think it's just kind of an interesting thing that it really just changes the whole tone of the game. And I think it really takes the other team out of it once they bring Chapman in. But I don't know. I guess
we kind of talked about that too, like when we're trying to eliminate the personal stuff or the off the field stuff and talk about his value, like shortening a game by an inning is his value. And now we've kind of got to see it, and it's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, if Chapman does need a day off, there's still Rondon who can obviously close, but, you know, it was really interesting because you could just feel that, okay. Like in that game that I went to, it was like, okay, you know, and the Brewers were never really in that game, but then two guys on, so that brought the, you know, anyway, it was interesting to see that like Madden really didn't have a very long leash on either of the closers on Wednesday or on Tuesday, and Chapman was the answer for him, and it was over, you know.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see him sort of like, you know, use everything he has to win a game, even though it's a four-game set versus the Brewers. And, you know, it's, well, I don't want to call it meaningless, but, you know, these games aren't significant, but they're still going after it. He's still playing to win,
right?
Even with the huge central lead and against a pretty weak opponent. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I assume he's got it all laid out from how it works as far as reserving Chapman for the final run.
Well, I think in a way, if you have a game one, you don't want to blow it because when you're looking at wins and losses, it doesn't matter who they come against, you know? And so a win against the Brewers is really just as valuable, you know, in the win column as a win against the Cardinals. So I think there's no reason in letting those games slip away or letting a team like the Brewers even just kind of work their way back into it. I mean, the Cubs never trailed in the four games in this series. And I think, you know, kind of looking ahead, I think that we'll see the Cubs really bury several teams here in the rest of the season because some of these teams have gotten weaker, like the Brewers by trading away Luke Roy. And it feels like the Cubs are just really cruising right now. And the way they jumped on the Brewers early, that was really nice to see them, you know, really just kind of pile on early, especially Wednesday's game. You know, what they did in the first inning was really impressive. And, you know, I think that's a really good thing. Like with these teams that aren't very strong, do that in the first inning. Just put them away and then put it on cruise control, you know.
Yeah, it's been nice to see the offense consistent over a handful of innings too, as opposed to like go five innings without doing anything. Like you put up a bunch early, but it seemed like in this series they consistently got after the pitching, and that was good to see, even though it was pretty weak pitching.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any comments on this series?
Boy, I don't have anything overall other than it's kind of amazing to see them, you know, sweep a series that they're supposed to sweep and then see key guys step up and have good series and build their confidence. So I think that was good to see.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I was really surprised in going to Tuesday's day game, how well Cahill pitched. And yeah, that was really good to see that, you know, I think with some of the uncertainty with Lackey right now, and really just, I mean, if you look at Arrieta today and the number of walks he issued, you know, very uncharacteristic. And I think that the more guys that they can kind of fill in and, you know, your Cahills and everything that can kind of take a start and give everybody, bump everybody back a little bit and give some days off. I think that's a really good thing right now.
Yeah, agreed. And then, of course, you know, it's hard to, you can't talk about the series without talking about what Chris Bryant did today. I mean, I don't know if we're saving it for later, but I'll throw it out there now. But yeah, 5 for 5 today with 5 RBI and 2 home runs. I mean, he just upped his season batting average to .296. And I think at the early in the season, we all kind of talk like, you know, you're happy with .270 from Bryant with the power numbers.
Sure.
You know, he's over 30 home. He's at 30 home runs now. And so for him to hit with that kind of power and also that kind of average plus a .392 on base percentage, I mean, this is just incredible what he's doing offensively. And yeah, I'm just like, just sort of like flabbergasted at how well he's doing offensively. And I mean, he's definitely at the top of the race for the MVP. So I think all of us knew he could do it, but to see it happen is just amazing.
Yeah. And I don't think, like, you look at that game that he had in Cincinnati there at the end of June, and it was like, oh, that was the Chris Bryant game. And then after today, I was thinking, I think we're going to have several Chris Bryant games. I don't think we're going to be able to have like that one game that was like, you know, the most memorable game of, you know, as far as his production goes, because man, when he gets locked in like he does, you know, like he was today, it's impressive.
Yeah, and it's great to see too, like him sort of take advantage of the Wrigley conditions, where
right,
he's so good at elevating the ball, and then on a day like today, all he's got to do is kind of like get it started, and then it flies out. Not to take anything away from him, but you know, it's nice to see him learn how to hit at Wrigley and then take advantage and hit a couple home runs. And
right, because if there's
but then also, you know, hit some line drives for base hit and get more RBIs. I mean, just like, I mean, I don't know, I don't care who was pitching to him today. I think I felt like he was going to get 4 or 5 hits.
Right. Yeah. So Kurt, with these 4 wins this week so far, where are we at with the lead, the magic number? I mean, there for a while, it's like the magic number was everywhere on Twitter and everything, and everybody's excited, and it feels like I haven't seen it lately. And I was just trying to think, like, I don't even exactly know what it is.
Well, the good news is there's a site called like Cubs Magic Number.
Right. Well, I'm sure, yeah, if I could find it if I wanted to. I'm not saying it was like a mystery. I just haven't. It hasn't come to me.
It's not trending.
Right. What you're saying. It's not coming to me. Yeah. I have to go find it.
Yeah, the magic number sits at.
Don't you 30. Have a tab open? Yeah. Can you just put it in a tab? Okay, sorry, Kurt.
Yeah, it sits at 30 right now, which with a 13-game lead over St. Louis, you got to feel pretty good about those numbers that you're approaching the 50% mark, where, like, let's say you got a 15-game lead and a 30-game magic number. That's a pretty locked down situation. So, they're pretty close to locking it down, even though technically, mathematically, they've got a little bit of work to do. But
should we make a prediction on when we think the Cubs are going to clinch the division?
Like date?
Yeah, let's choose a date.
Oh boy, I am not prepared for this conversation.
Okay, go, Corey. You brought it up.
Okay, so I think it's going to happen. I'm going to Colorado in like 3 weeks. So I think it'll happen there when I'm there. So it's like, I'm going to say September. I'm going to say my birthday, September 9th.
Okay, against the Astros. I think it'll come again in the Cardinals series, September 12th.
Yeah. Oh. I was going to say Cardinals series too.
Wouldn't that be great to clinch it against them?
Since you said 12th, I'll go 13th. But I do like that it could potentially happen in the Cardinal series, because that's like 20 some games out. So yeah, the math looks pretty good for that.
Yeah, I haven't looked.
And it's at St. Louis too. So
oh man,
oh that'd be pretty. That'd be pretty dope.
Yeah, actually, I just pulled my date out of my butt. I didn't even look at. I mean, I haven't looked at like the schedule over the next 3 weeks or anything.
You've had a bad day when you just pull your date out of your butt.
I'm just going to hope it happens somewhere in that three-game Cardinal series, 12, 13, 14.
It would also be nice to do it at Wrigley, though.
Yeah, kind of, but even better at Bush BUSH.
Their empty stadium. You know, that wouldn't be a bad series to go to. I might have to, because yeah. You know tickets are going to be cheap. Tickets are cheap down there. So that's where we're at. Magic number, you said 30. And so
I guess the only bad news of this is that the Cardinals are still in the wild card. They have the second wild card by a one game margin over the Pirates at this point. So, yeah. So our fears of them sneaking in are still there, but there's still a ways to go. They could easily drop out. Then let's hope that happens. Yeah. I'd rather see Pittsburgh get it than the Cardinals, but.
Well, I actually kind of think that the Cardinals would be easier to beat than the Pirates.
True, but it's still the Cardinals. I just don't want them in the playoffs.
Right. I know. I hear you. I don't want them anywhere near it.
Keep that double magic as far away as possible.
I'd rather face
one other sort of interesting statistical note is that Baseball Perspectives has officially put the Cubs at 100%. Playoff odds, which I think is pretty fair, but for whatever reason Fangraphs is lagging behind at 96%. So, you know, Dave Cameron, if you're listening, or whoever's controlling the numbers over there, like, you gotta up your algorithm, because 96%, even like, let's go at least 98 or 99%. I mean, 100% is never a certain, and nothing's ever a certainty, but 96, that seems pessimistic.
That's hilarious.
Let's go Fangraphs, pick it up.
Oh man,
maybe Carson Cistulli can fix that.
He can write a poem about it.
Yes.
Okay, so one thing I think we should talk about on this episode, Hamill and Hendricks have been really good. And, you know, as we're creeping up towards the end of the season, there's a lot of, like, Cy Young talk, I guess. And so I'm kind of curious what you guys think. Like, is this legitimate? Like, should people actually consider either one of those guys, especially Kyle Hendricks? Like, is that a conversation worth having, do you think?
Well, it's worth mentioning. I don't think you can really... I don't know, put too much stock in it right now. There's 42 games left. So these guys could get 6, 7, 8 more starts, something like that. And so you look at like Arrieta's numbers when he won last year, 22-6 with the 1.77 ERA. And then Kershaw back in 2014, 21-3 with the 1.77 ERA. These guys don't have, I mean, it's looking like they probably aren't going to have win totals akin to that, and obviously not loss totals that are as low as that. Still, I mean, what these guys are doing right now is pretty awesome and noteworthy. I mean, Hendricks is, he's 11-7 is his record currently. But the things that stand out about him is he does have the third lowest ERA among all starting pitchers at 2.19. Hitters are hitting 209 off of him, which is good for 8th among starting pitchers. He still leads the entire league in soft contact percentage at 25.6 and has the second lowest hard contact percentage at 24.1. Still, though, he's far from the top in the win column, like I was saying. I mean, there's a couple guys I think that already have 17 wins. But he's also far from the top in fewest number of losses, too. So there's a couple things I think that would mitigate his chances of winning it. And could he win 6 more games? Yeah, I think so. Given the way he appears to be trending. And there have been guys in recent memory who have won with, by winning 15, 16 games in a season. So it's not totally out of the question.
Yeah, and I agree. Like, I think they deserve mention, but they're both huge long shots just because they're not they're not as sexy as, well, I mean this in a baseball term, not as a physical term, but, you know, they're not the huge strikeout rates. They're not the super low ERAs. They just know how to pitch. And, you can't compete with those power pitchers sometimes. And I think the Cy Young is heavily skewed in towards ERA, which seems a bit unfair because I don't look at the whole picture. But as far as Hamill goes, like, I think one important thing we can all take from this is that we can kind of forget about second half Hamill as we knew it before, because not only is he not second half Hamill that kind of fell apart the last couple of years, but he's actually probably the best pitcher in baseball in the second half, because his post All-Star break numbers are 6-0, and he leads in all of baseball with a 0.95 ERA in the second half. So last year, his second half ERA was 5.1. So it's quite an improvement, to say the least. He hasn't allowed an earned run in his last three starts.
Dang.
And opponents are hitting just 172 off of him in the second half. So that puts his season total at 13-5 with a 2.75 ERA and a 2.11 opponent batting average. So on the season, he's doing well. And second half, he's doing incredibly well. So whatever you thought second half Hamill might pop up, at least to this point, he is not that. So, I mean, he's been the best on the staff and arguably the best in baseball since the All-Star break. So I think that at least it includes him in the conversation, but of course a huge long shot to actually win an award like that.
Well, yeah. Let's not forget too, he's hitting 259 and has driven in 7 runs on the season. It seems like he's always getting a hit in a game, and I don't know. I like him with the bat.
Yeah,
I mean, that affects Cy Young voting, right?
Right. Silver Slugger. Yeah. I think that here's kind of where I stand with it is I think that both of those guys have been pleasant surprises this year. It's really cool to see Hendricks doing it, especially, and to see how he's doing it. I think it's a lot of fun to watch. But, you know, I mean, if you look at the stats, so like sorted by WAR, and this is all of baseball. This isn't, you know, just the National League. Well, actually, let me sort it. I was on an airplane today, so I wasn't able to look at any stats. So I'm doing it right now. But
you didn't buy the in-flight Wi-Fi?
No, it was $8, and I didn't think it was going to be any good, so I didn't do it. So if you sort by WAR, Hendricks is ranked 10th in the National League. And so, you know, the names ahead of him are the names that you would expect, you know, Kershaw, Syndergaard, Fernandez, Cueto, Bumgarner, Scherzer, Strasburg, Arrieta is 8, DeGrom. So, I mean, I think in a way, I think it's like kind of a distraction to talk about like these kinds of awards right now, because I don't necessarily think that Hendricks deserves the Cy Young. I don't think that he does. And I think that like the push, I think there's so much to enjoy about this team, and there's so many like other things to kind of like take pleasure in. I think like it's not a failure if Kyle Hendricks this season in his season is not a failure if he doesn't win the Cy Young. He was still really, really good and better than most of us expected. I mean, we thought like he was going to start trending in this direction, but I don't think we saw it happening the way that it did. And so that's just I think that's just where I stand with it. I don't think either one of them are necessary. I mean, I hate to say that they don't really belong in the conversation, but I'm not sure like those types of awards are what this team is looking for. And I don't know. I didn't really take a stance on anything I just kind of wandered around.
I think I agree. I think Hamble is safely out of it, but I think Hendricks might, if he keeps doing what he's doing, he could creep in, because Tom Tango has a Cy Young tracker based on like some other algorithm that he did. And Hendricks sits just behind Arrieta at number 5 mm-hmm. in points in this system. So theoretically, he could creep in there. But when you look at the fact that he would have to pass Arrieta, Scherzer, Kershaw, Bumgarner,
right?
That seems like pretty steep odds. But I think it's just cool that, you know, we're able to even say they're pitching well enough to be considered. So
Well, and I think
that's really the takeaway.
Right. Well, and for me, the takeaway is, hey, we have pitchers that we would be comfortable with seeing take the mound in the playoffs. You know, that's kind of what to me is more important, is that these guys have pitched well enough that, like, I'm not really, if the playoffs started today and Hamill was, you know, going to get a start in a playoff game, I'm not uncomfortable with that. And I'm not as uncomfortable with either him or Hendricks on the mound as I was last year. So, I don't know. I guess that's just kind of where my head's at. I don't really care about the awards too much. But
when you look at the Tom Tango numbers, like just the site I'm looking at, they list the top 20 pitchers, and this is all of baseball. So it's not broken out by league. Mm-hmm. And four of the five Cubs starters are in the top 20.
Right. Yeah.
Points. So, I mean, that's just crazy. That's a scary stat right there.
Yeah. Sometimes they just jump out at you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but hopefully, I mean, it's going to be interesting too, you know, how, like I said earlier with Cahill and others kind of getting some spot starts and taking a little bit of pressure off them. It'll be interesting to see how these guys are performing 6 weeks from now, because it'd be nice to see them pitching just like they are right now. How about some Tommy La Stella news? You guys ready for this?
Yep. TSL, yeah. Double A.
That's right. So he went to Double A and then he got hit in the foot. And now he's out of the lineup.
Oh my.
And the odd thing is that Chris Coughlin went on the 15-day DL with a rib contusion. I think that's what it was. And had La Stella reported to Iowa right away, he would probably be with the only team he wants to play for. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, man. Hasn't that happened to him before in a rehab start? Let Tommy La Stella, where he injured himself right away?
Seems like it.
I feel like that's happened before, too. But my goodness, that is just gets more and more silly.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. I don't think he was, like, injured. I just, you know.
He's getting another day off.
Yeah, sure. We'll go with that.
Well, how about that Rizzo wall catch?
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys already mention that?
No, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was amazing. Awesome. Okay, so I was flying. I flew during that game, and I got into Houston, and I turned my phone on real quick, and I was able to catch the bottom of the ninth. But I saw, like, Twitter all over about, you know, in Photoshop. Well, actually, I first saw Photoshop of Rizzo, the one where he was standing on the balance beam or whatever. I was like, what the heck is that? Like, that's just kind of out of the blue, you know? And then I saw that video, and, like, the first thing I did when I got in my brother-in-law's car, I was like, oh, you got to check out this one. Look at this Rizzo play.
But it's just so weird. It's
ridiculous.
I showed some people at work who are sort of casual Cubs fans and don't really watch that much. But at first, the one from last year came up, and it's like when you watched it at the end, it's like virtually the same. I think they're playing the Brewers. He goes over to there, and it's like the same spot. It's so weird watching the two videos back to back. The guy showing it to is like, this is the same video. No, it's different.
I think this one was...
You know what was... I loved about it was the reaction from the Brewers. I forget who the hitter was, but did you guys know his reaction at the end where he was so hopeful it was just going to end up in the stands, and then it was like instant, like the football got pulled out from under him when he was trying to kick it, it was just instant dejection.
Well, and to see Rizzo's so face and how much, you know, how much pleasure he got out of that, and the fact that, you know, I think he tries to kind of like hide his... that kind of stuff. Sometimes he'll put his glove over his face and stuff like that. But, you know, these guys are just out there having fun. And it feels like when things are going your way, all sorts of these crazy things happen, like, you know, plays like that and plays like Javi's swim move and all the defensive stuff that Javi's made. And it's just, it's amazing. And it's a lot of fun. Like, we watched terrible, terrible Cubs defenses for years, you know, where we would talk about, like, watching the Little League World Series and noting that, like, those kids had better fundamentals on defense than the Cubs that we were watching, you know, 2010 or 11 or whatever. And it's just so much fun to watch this defense. And that's one thing that, like, seems like here in the last few weeks I've really started to appreciate. You know, you know that they have good defensive numbers, but watching it in action is just really impressive. And Hayward out mm-hmm. there, and I mean, the infield is just incredible. So,
speaking of having fun, one last thing I wanted to mention too is the different kind of fun is the bullpen's their statue game when like a screamer gets hit over there, and that little gif that surfaced of Irvine surfaced of the ball hitting Wood's chair, like right between his legs. Like it just, it was really hit really hard. And it was amazing how he did not move. And, Spencer Patton was his like positioning was kind of funny. His head was down too. Notice how if you watch that again, they all kind of have their junk covered up. Like they're,
I noticed that.
Like Wood kind of casually has his junk covered. Like he's protecting against a free kick in soccer. And Patton kind of has his head down, but you can see he sort of glances over at Wood toward the end of it. And it just, that game is ridiculous, but hilarious. And I noted it on the live broadcast too. just nobody moved. I mean, it was hit hard.
Right, and right at them. I mean, it's one thing when it just kind of like goes past them or off to the side a little bit, but that was hit like right at them and really hard. And
almost hit Wood in the hands, protecting.
Can you imagine it hits Wood in the left hand?
Oh, man.
No, let's not imagine.
Holy cow.
So, Andy, do you have a Rube Waddell story for us this week?
Yeah, I do. So... just before the gates opened for a game in Pittsburgh one day, Rube was standing by the turnstile at the gate, and the turnstile caught his eye. It's shiny and it moves. Caught his eye, and he started spinning it. Now, the GM was a guy named Bancroft. He came to check on the size of the crowd, and according to the Pittsburgh Gazette, the figures he gazed upon made the perspiration come out in drops. He couldn't believe what he saw. He thought a huge crowd may have gotten into the park without him noticing or something like that. And so he was so excited that Rube asked him why he was all worked up. And so the paper goes on to say, and I'm going to read this directly quote this out of the paper. So Rube asked him what the trouble was. And then, Bancroft explained that there was something wrong with the register on the turnstile. So Rube inquired, "Oh, does that thing tell how many people are here?" And Bancroft said, "Yes, every time it clicks, it registers one." Rube said, "Well, I did not know that. And I guess I turned it around a few times before the gate opened," innocently admitted Rube. "A few times? Well, I should say you did. According to this style, there are 10,000 people in the grandstand." So I don't know how many people the ballpark held, but like he spun the turnstile around a ton of times.
Like a handful. Like 5,000.
Oh man. It was shiny. It clicked.
It was like a little new toy for him.
Gosh. So that does it for this episode. Don't forget that we're doing a drawing for a John Baker bobblehead, and anyone that pledges on our Patreon campaign is eligible to win, and we will do a drawing here at the end of the month or right at the beginning of September. So to join the Patreon campaign, go to patreon.com/IVMV. That's patreon.com/IVMV. So the Cubs go out to Colorado for a weekend series. It'd be nice to see the Cubs continue their streak. Thank you for listening and downloading, and until Sunday night, go Cubs!